Who brought me this book, gentlemen? Paul? Paul, yeah. Where's he writing from?
Macedonia.
Yeah, he's up in Macedonia. And why did he, up until now, up until the time that he was in Ephesus, Timothy was traveling with him, wasn't it? And then Paul dropped him off. How long was Paul there at Ephesus? Anybody remember? Yeah, about 3 years. And so he had Timothy with him, and then Paul was called to Macedonia. And he left Timothy there. How old do we know Timothy was? Approximately.
About 20-some.
Yeah, he's in his 20s. He's a young man. Fairly new in scripture and in knowledge. But did you have a question, Kelly?
No,
Oh.
cleaning my glasses.
Cleaning glasses, okay.
Cleaning your
Yeah, I do
glasses.
that all the time, holding on. Well, here's chapter 5. We have a little outline of how to discuss rules for living with other people. And he's talking primarily about members of the church. But Timothy has been left there to care for the congregation, to oversee what's going on, and to be their preacher. Now, we know that Timothy was an older, younger person, so could he be a spiritual leader for an older person?
Ron,
Yes.
excuse me, but for some reason you're not very clear. It sounds garbled or something.
Yes, you said that last week, and I hope that it's not me. Is anybody else on Zoom having trouble understanding what I'm saying?
Of course, leave it to me. I'm sorry.
No.
Well, I hope not, but we'll do the best we can. How would you approach an older man if you had a problem? If he's maybe spoken in error or done something wrong, would you rebuke him sharply?
No, might talk to him in private.
Okay. Good idea.
Lovingly, respectfully, it's
Yes.
Well, he might be in a situation here where he has an older man who is perhaps not as knowledgeable as Timothy was, maybe a newer convert, perhaps, and newer converts. Are usually, these people are growing in their faith and in their knowledge, and it's not uncommon to see them make mistakes that we all have done in the past. We're all, at one time or another, we've made our mistakes. And so, what if this guy is, this older gentleman is a new convert? How are you going to handle that? You can't do it sharply with you, can you? What would happen if you sharply rebuked? What's the possibility? You could run him off. You could force him or make him decide not to associated with the saints anymore, and you caused him to go astray. Whose doorstep is that going to be laid at? It'll be ours, isn't it? We do that to someone and don't think before we act, then we could very possibly be the cause of that person losing their soul. That is going to create a problem for us. Yes, ma'am.
You could ask him to explain why he felt that way or believed that way and draw him into a conversation and then show him gently, you know, where the mistake is, you know, once you draw him into this conversation.
Sure. Sure.
Well, I was going to say the same thing. You may find out in finding out what he knows and understands and where he got the information, you may find out that you're the one who's wrong. Or you may say, well, how does that work with this scripture? I'm having difficulty with the two of them.
Yeah. It's basically, well, you know, Timothy probably or most likely would be more knowledgeable than the younger person. Remember, he's had hands laid on him, and he's had a spiritual gift. So I'm sure that he has, even though of his young age, he still has a great amount of wisdom and knowledge that's been gifted to him. So you would treat someone more like you would treat your father. You wouldn't sharply rebuke your father, I don't think. So you, there are just many situations where it would just take the type of response that you would have. Anybody ever heard of sandwich approach? Anybody ever heard that? Yes.
Sandwich approach. You say something kind, and then you say what you really need to talk about, because it might be kind of hard, and then you end with a encouragement and a kind thought.
Yeah. So this is used all the time. We call it the sandwich approach. If you have something, a problem with somebody, or you see something you need to talk to them about, you praise them. And then you sock them in the face. And then you praise them again. So it kind of eases that painful in between a little bit. And excellent technique for just taking the sting out of a praise. Very, very easy to do, very comfortable to learn. And it works. So it's something that we need to think about as we go through our lives. Is this going to apply to us today? And how do we handle older people?
Yes.
Yeah, sure it is. This is just as effective today as it was 2,000 years ago. Yes, Bob?
Not just older people, everyone. We need to think ahead. And lots of times if we have an issue with a person, we go over it in our mind and we trump it all up and think about it. And it's very easy to skip that first step and go right into chewing them out or telling them, you know, how things should be and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that before you speak, but, you know, this not only applies to an older man, but as Bob says, it applies to everybody. The first couple of verses in 1 Timothy chapter 5 tell us how do we treat younger men? We treat them as your brother. Younger women, treat them as your sister. Older women, treat them just like you would your mother. Yes, sir. All right, please.
I was just thinking this first verse here doesn't all just apply just to men, but this also would include women too, as well.
Yeah.
With no exception.
Yeah. So that's something that we want to be very, very cautious about when we start how we approach somebody that we've got a problem with or see a problem with, and how to correct it. It has to be out of a little bit of respect, but it doesn't. Question number two is, how might an older person respond better to encouragement than a strong review? You ever say, I've had it happen to me really once, but I never got soft in the eye or anything like that. But, how I approached it with my mistake and so forth, but you're just a kid. What are you talking about? Who are you to put me down? Who are you to criticize me? You're in your 20s and I'm 70. I've lived a lot longer. You and I know a lot more than you do. I had somebody tell me that one time. You're just a kid. And it just kind of caught me by surprise. I didn't know how to answer. Kind of was like cold water in my face. And so I just let it go. And I think about that once in a while. But a guy told me that. But again, a positive approach would be so much better than a negative approach. And you certainly don't want to cause somebody to turn away from the Lord. That would be just a criminal type thing to happen. And unfortunately, well, we have to watch our talk going along. How should a church, this is question number three, how should a church treat widows? Paul's overall message in 5:3, to honor widows who are truly widows. How should we treat widows? Anybody got any ideas?
Helping them and respecting them and honoring them, just like it said.
I'm sorry.
I said honoring them like it says and treating them with respect and helping them if they need help, supporting them in their loss.
Well, verse 4 is going to give us the answer. Or a question for Steve. What does the phrase real or truly mean in this story?
Doesn't it mean if they have no family to help them? If they're really a widow, if they have no other family to help them, except for the church family?
Okay. Kelly?
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, you should check closer. I'm missing Vicky. Is she okay?
She's in Tennessee.
Oh, okay. I miss her a lot. She's always talking to about us.
Depends on the age.
Okay.
Ron?
Yes.
This question, it may be strange, but we know that if a widow has children, that they are grandchildren, the family, that they're supposed to take care of. But what if the family won't take care of them, refuses? Does the church then have a responsibility?
What do you think?
I would think so, but it doesn't say.
Well,
yeah, I don't think so.
It's kind of... And that's a difficult question. What about those widows who lost their husband, they lost their means of support, perhaps? They're not able to take care of themselves. They're a member, a family member of the church, but they have no one who's willing to step up to the pump and provide support. What do we do then as a church? Yeah.
Well, I can think of one thing, that there are different services and things that are out there. So somebody in the church needs to do what a family member would have done and see if she has any, you know, pensions or anything that she can get. And then after that, then the rest of the needs, then I would think the congregation would need to figure out what to do.
Well, remember Max said when the widows were being ignored by the church, and one day ignored, but the elders and the congregation there were the ones who were dealing with the problem of helping take care of the widows of the church. And it's taking up so much of their time that they appointed 7 upright men to take care of it. So the burden off the back of the elders, whose time was more valuable than spending in prayer and supplication. And so they appointed deacons, or appointed 7 good men to take care of this difficulty that was arising in the church there in Jerusalem. But here, Paul is writing this first note to Timothy, and he's defining what a true widow is, or a real widow is, and whether or not they qualify for help. Now, if you have a situation, and Paul here outlined and said, well, you know, that kids, you know, you expect them to take care of her, like grandkids or aunts and uncles or whatever, but people in your family have the first line of defense. Now, there may be other avenues for help, maybe some public services or stuff like that. But it would be a really touchy situation if you ignore this plight that this woman is in. She has no place to turn. And if we're capable of taking care of her, it's our job, isn't it?
Yep.
And I certainly would think so. Even though she may have living children or grandchildren, it is their job, but says if they don't take care of her, they're the worst
in for them.
That's right. So what happens when they abandon her? She needs the support that she deserves, the support. And it's our job to take care of that. So it's, you know, we're gonna really find out there, you know, what about widows that are not truly widows? Not real widows. That's kind of an interesting terminology. I think that it leaves us in a kind of a tinderbox of questions, but try to understand and have the wisdom to see that plight and take care of it for success. I know that the church should prioritize those who are truly in need. I think this should be one example of it. But charity shouldn't be swarming on those who have the ability to help themselves. If they have income sometime, but it's not enough to take care of their needs, then I think the church needs to step up. And yes, God.
Wouldn't it be individuals that if they have family, but the family won't help? Shouldn't individuals help where they can?
Oh, sure.
Instead of the church doing it, individuals in the church usually.
Yeah, absolutely. The ability of
not necessarily the church itself.
Well, you know, I mean, if you have a situation where these people are in need, and you see it as an individual, and you see it as your responsibility to help them out where you can. I mean, it could be something besides monetary as far as that's. But buying some groceries or going in there and cleaning your house. Or, you know, you're talking about people who are aging. If anybody wants to, I'm not a widow and my wife's not a widow. She can go over to my house and clean anytime. We'll put you to work.
Okay.
In fact, Sharon and I are contemplating moving into a smaller home, putting ours on the market because it's just so big. We just can't, not physically taking care of it all the time. And so we were kind of looking to downsize, and that's going to be putting our house in the market. If anybody's in the market, we're going to be out. Paul?
No thanks on the house, so I got the answer. One thing all of us can do to widows in need or each other or our neighbor or whatever, we can be an advocate for them. And that's what Carol said a little while ago, that there are so many programs available to Americans in the United States, and they're not well known a lot of times. And they're just out there for the people that have friends or someone or themselves can discover them and see what to do to qualify for them. It's just amazing what is available. So that would be a very important role that each one of us could supply to anyone. Little kids, for instance, my daughter is she's an advocate for foster kids. So there's lots of roles out there that we can all play. Not only for our brethren in the church, but our neighbors, or even to people we don't even know.
Yeah, and you might have knowledge that nobody else has, or very few people have, that would help them out. And like the veterans' benefits for widows, you know, that's out there available to some degree. Yes.
It also reminds widows that you need to ask your family when you have a problem, too. It's not just, well, they didn't step up. Well, did you ask them? I mean, if you have a problem that we can't pray for something if we don't know what the problem is, if we don't know about it, and they can't step up if you don't give them a chance. You think it's obvious as the nose on your face that they should see that you're struggling or whatever. But we need to, when we're having difficulties, tell those people and tell our brethren also.
Yeah, you know, if you would sit down with someone who's lost their husband and ask them a question, you know, that would be the one that you would ask. Well, what about your family? Are they capable of assisting you, or that would just be a question right on along with Cheryl. Dean, did you have a...
Yeah, I've been thinking about this, and I think it boils down. So what Timothy's being told here, in my opinion, is not individual bullet points. It's know your congregation.
Yep.
So as spiritual leader, know your congregation. So have a relationship. So I can't go to a person and effectively rebuke them kindly or sternly if I don't have a relationship. So as the spiritual leader or leaders or members, we need to know each other. We need to have a relationship with each other to where I need for everybody in this building to know that first and foremost, I love them. And so when I'm coming to them to help them or to rebuke them, it's out of love.
Absolutely.
But if I have a relationship, then I know the needs. You know, it's should the church help? Should the church help? Which, you know, we're the church. Ecclesia, the called out group. But what we have to be careful of is sitting back and saying, yeah, the church needs to take care of that lady. When I have a lawnmower, I have a weed eater, I have food in the freezer, I have these things individually that if I have this relationship with somebody, then I'll be trying to meet those needs before the church body has to get involved. I think the problem that we run into is we're all very distant, we're all very private, and we're also all very lazy, if I'm being completely honest. And so we're waiting for somebody else to do it. Well, there's that widow. The elders need to do something about it. Or the deacons need to do something about it. And I think that if we think that way, we're missing the point. And if we're just sitting and waiting for people to do for us, we're missing the point. So I think Timothy's being told, get to know this body of people that you're worshiping with and that you're instructing and develop relationships and know them. So as a young man, as a preacher, and I've got a young woman who's lost her husband, that's a really hard conversation to go to her. So just imagine walking up to Jesse and telling Jesse, you know, we can't help you. We're sorry you lost your husband. We can't financially help you because you're still young and attractive. Go out in the world and find another man. And yet, that's more or less what we read.
That's right.
You know, but so I have to have a loving relationship with Jesse to where, you know, when she comes to me and she's burdened with the difficulties of raising a child on her own, first and foremost, she has family. Her family should be helping her, which obviously they would. But if she's in a situation where she's out here all alone, then individually we will help her as much as we can, but we have to encourage her to better her situation. And that's hard if I don't have a relationship with Jesse on the front end before she ends up in that situation.
Yes.
So, just something to think about.
Well, there are probably lots of things you can do individually. Got a lady out there who's 7 years old, and although you see it around, I see some in my neighborhood, but she's out there mowing her own grass.
Yep.
Picking their own the weeds out of flower beds and making their place look nice. Yeah, that's easy to take care of. We can just do that as part of helping out where we can. What kinds of things describe a godly widow? But this is question number 6. What kind of things should a godly widow do?
Says, be hospitable, help the poor, and follow every good work.
Okay.
So even though you're a widow, there's things you can do too.
You should have said, oh my God. Okay, go ahead, John.
Verse 9. Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man. So she can only have been married once,
We'll talk about that in just a second. Talking about a godly widow. What are some of the things that she needs to do? Set her hope on God.
Yep.
Pray.
Just continues in her prayers and supplications as mentioned before. Show hospitality. Welcome saints. Get out on your hands and knees and wash their feet. No. That custom 2,000 years ago, we don't do that. Might take the shoes off or something like that. And you don't wash their feet anymore. Cure for the sick. But she looks at these things as part of her job as a godly widow. Why did Paul set an age limit of 60 on widow? Anybody?
Maybe because older women wouldn't remarry. Most of the men married younger women, so if she's a widow and her husband was way older than her, and somebody that would marry her wouldn't be a young man.
Well, not necessarily. What if you just killed in a car accident or get shot?
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of first century people. Not now.
Well, they didn't live that long back in those days, as a rule. Probably the average life expectancy would be somewhere around 40.
40, yeah.
And if you got beyond that and became an elder, it was fortunate for you. But actually, probably 40 or 45 was considered old.
Yeah,
older, an older person in the 1900s, early 1900s. Our 1800s, 1850s, on up to about 1920. The average age, I think, was something like 47 or something like that. It was in the 40s. And all of a sudden, we had this advent of all these new medicines and knowledge and so forth that were discovered. And actually, those of us who lived in a great part of the 20th century, we saw a lot of changes. I was thinking about my mother. She was born in 1905.
Yeah.
They didn't have airplanes, they didn't have cars. And she died in 1998. So she was 93 years old. And boy, look at the change that she saw in her life. It's incredible. She started out in Arkansas, not knowing what a car looked like, not knowing what an airplane looked like. And later on in life, she was working for a company that manufactured parts for the eyes of the missiles. So a lot of changes in the last century. And we're sharing, not all of them good, of course, but we can see that in the way people are abandoning the church and our numbers are growing smaller over the time. So anyway, why did it seems like when Paul wrote this, and we know Paul wrote this when he was inspired, but this really seems to me to be really a harsh statement. Cut off is 60 years ago. You're not 60. You don't deserve anything. It just is difficult for me to grasp sometimes when I look at that. But he then gives certain reasons that, and he tells what he expects them to do. What are some of the things that he expects them to do? These are widows under 60.
So, before we get too far into this, I was wondering, I'm not relating this to myself, so I'm well taken care of. Why aren't widowers spoken of here?
Yeah.
Men get very lonely, they get very needy.
Yeah.
And nothing said that I can find.
Yeah, it doesn't mention men who are widowers, but put the link and research a little bit more. But I've noticed the absence of that as well. Yes, sure. Yeah.
I think generally, I don't know about today, but back then the men were usually older when they married somebody. So I think they just remarried if they could find someone.
Yeah, but that's full of widows that widows under 60 to remarry and have children.
Generally, the women of that time, a lot of the rules were because they needed more help because they got married in order to have that family, in order to have that household and all that. They didn't generally go out and do everything.
Well,
that was kind of the man's part.
Yeah,
and providing and protecting. So.
And Paul mentioned something too that just is a little sensitive, about the passionate state of a person's physical needs, something like that. It's like cut it off at age 60. I thought that was kind of an abrupt cut of where he had it. This had a name someday, but that was kind of a place that you could step on toes. Yes.
Well, the answer to the question is, therefore, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give their enemies no occasion for reproach. If the younger widow women are supposed to get married, then the older widowers have somebody to marry under the custom, which is what Kelly was saying. That's sort of the answer to your question about what the younger women are supposed to look at getting married again, because that's the way their society was set up.
Well, yeah, that's very true. And
today,
it's Paul is concerned about them, and so he's making some suggestions here that would help them out. But these women under 50 who are widows, should we just let them go awry and not take care of them at all? So there's some questions there that, maybe their passion can be drawn away and get them away from any attention that they should be paying to God. And this could draw them away from the faith. They could be going door to door being nosy and gossip. Well, I think the older women would do that. That kind of period, the people are done. And so, my wife and I were looking at a place the other day, and the next door neighbor, the house was listed by a realtor, and it was empty, and we were looking through some of the windows, and the neighbor, old lady, she's 80 years old, she came, "Oh, can I help you?" And, boy, we learned a lot about the people who used to live in that house. And I had to chuckle when we left. So, super nice lady. But as far as she knew, the inside of that empty house didn't belong at all. And knew everything about the people that lived in it. And kind of had a chuckle about that. Kelly, did you ever know that?
Oh, I was just thinking that, the younger women go gossip and then, they get bored. And so you find something to do, and your hands aren't busy, so keep busy. So that makes sense. But when you get 60, I don't know, maybe you slow down some, and you're not as active anyway. So you're kind of Who wants a husband that's worth it?
question to you. Is this applicable to the church today?
Absolutely.
Now we're talking, Timothy got this letter 2,000 years ago. Is it different affecting and affects us today as a church? 2,000 years later, sure it does. So nothing's changed. The church has a responsibility. And so we want to be sure and attend the needs of those people who are in great need. Okay, thank you so much, everyone. Appreciate all the comments. And next, please, the lesson is back there. It's back by the door. Be sure and pick one up. This will be the last.
Yeah, it is.
First thing.